I was not panicked, oddly. I never did lose my nerve. Jacob's homicide charge was a grenade. We would all inevitably be destroyed by it. Only the details remained to be worked out. But a strange, calm urgency came over me. Surely a search warrant team was already on its way to my home. That may even have been why the DA had brought me all the way down here, to keep me out of that house before it could be searched. It was exactly what I would have done. I bolted out of the office. I called Lori's cell from the car. No answer. Lori, it's very, very important. Call me back right away, the second you get this message. I called Jacob's cell phone, too. No answer. I got home too late. Four Newton cruisers were already parked outside, watching, freezing the house while they waited for the warrant to arrive. I continued around the block and parked. My house is adjacent to a train stop on the suburban commuter train line. An 8-foot fence separates the platform from my backyard. I spidered over it easily. There was so much adrenaline in me, I could have clambered up Mount Rushmore. In my yard, I pushed through the arborvitae at the edge of the lawn. The leaves flicked and needled across me as I bodied through the bushes. I ran across my backyard. My neighbor was in his backyard, gardening. He waved to me, and out of neighborly reflex, I waved back as I sprinted by. Inside, I called out quietly for Jacob, to prepare him for what was coming. No one was home. I bolted up the stairs into Jacob's room, where I yanked open drawers, the closet, tossed up the laundry piles on the floor, desperate to find anything remotely incriminating and get rid of it. "Does that sound awful to you? I hear the little voice in your head. Destruction of evidence. Obstruction of justice. You are naive. You imagine the courts are reliable, that wrong results are rare, and therefore I ought to have trusted the system. If he truly believed Jacob was innocent, you are thinking, he would have simply let the police sweep in and take whatever they liked. Here is the dirty little secret. The error rate in criminal verdicts is much higher than anyone imagines. Not just false negatives, the guilty criminals who get off scot-free. Those errors we recognize and accept. They are the predictable result of stacking the deck in defendants' favor as we do. The real surprise is the frequency of false positives. The innocent men found guilty. That error rate we do not acknowledge, do not even think about, because it calls so much into question. The fact is, what we call proof is as fallible as the witnesses who produce it, human beings all. Memories fail, eyewitness identifications are notoriously unreliable, even the best-intentioned cops are subject to failures of judgment and recall. The human element in any system is always prone to error. Why should the courts be any different? They are not. Our blind trust in the system is the product of ignorance and magical thinking, and there was no way in hell I was going to trust my son's fate to it. Not because I believed he was guilty, I assure you, but precisely because he was innocent. I was doing what little I could to ensure the right result, the just result. If you do not believe me, go spend a few hours in the nearest criminal court. Then ask yourself if you really believe it is error-free. Ask yourself if you would trust your child to it.